You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us on the first half of the program this afternoon is Ken Forrestal. And Ken has been involved in local theater for many years, and we had the pleasure of him sharing his talents in my class, because in addition to being an actor, director, he also is a Foley artist and did a little bit of Foley. Ken will explain to us in just a minute. First of all, though, I'd like to take the time to welcome you, Ken, and thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for letting me work with your class.
And I mentioned Foley and Foley artist. Tell us a little bit about how that term came about and what is it?
Well, the Foley was the gentleman who did the sound effects for the radio shows. As you hear all these sound effects with the radio show, but they're not being done by the actor. The actor is really frozen to the microphone when they were doing the radio shows, and the Foley would be behind them at a table or tables, and he would make all the sound effects that went along with the production, the gunshots, the footsteps, the doors opening, glass breaking. It was all done by one person in the studio at that time, simultaneous with the production.
It had to be very synchronized, correct?
Right. It was done with the production, yes.
And especially if you had a lot of action in a show, and particularly shows like, in some of the Westerns that they had for kids, they were, you know, pretty generic. Everybody kind of knew what was going to happen. But then when CBS said, we want an adult Western, and Gunsmoke came along, and they tackled a lot of themes that had not been talked about before. But there were a lot of sounds and sound effects during that show.
Right. And, you know, the amazing thing is I wouldn't say I'm a complete expert on it, but I've never heard of dual Foleys. Everything that I've seen, it was all done by one Foley, even all the multitude. So there was some pretty hectic moments in some of those productions for the sound effects.
And what got you interested in doing this, Ken?
Well, I've always liked old-time radio. I have several productions that I like to listen to. And I'm with the El Paso Playhouse. And one day we were just sitting around talking, and I said, well, you know, let's do War of the Worlds. War of the Worlds is coming up, and it was like a week or so before October 30th. It was like the week before, and I said, let's do War of the Worlds. And they said, okay, and I was able to put a quick cast together and with a gentleman by the name of Joe Pfeiffer, who's a Foley in Las Cruces, was able to put a Foley together to do it. And it really, we had a very strong turnout. So then everybody says, hey, do you have any other radio shows? Well, I just happen to have maybe a couple of hundred. And I said, yeah. So we've now been doing 4 to 5 a year.
And you are going to be doing something tonight. And you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're going to be doing the Maltese Falcon, but this is the radio broadcast, not the movie. It's a little bit different, but it shares the same theme and same characters. And we'll be doing the Maltese Falcon. And in this, when this was done in 1946, the three main characters actually showed up at the radio station to play. Humphrey Bogart played Sam Spade, Sidney Greenstreet played Gutman, and Peter Lorre played Cairo on this particular thing. You didn't get that too much.
Why, and people might wonder about this, and of course, the golden age of radio was a relatively short period for it being a golden age, 30s and 40s mainly. And because of the war, a lot of people said that they needed some kind of distraction, something to get them away from the war. But why is it that people were very interested in detective shows, macabre? Or thrillers, the creaking door, lights out, Inner Sanctum, and people love those kind of shows.
Yeah, because I don't think there was much of it in the movie theaters, and at that time the movies were not that sophisticated where they could do some of this stuff, where it was easily okay to make certain sounds on the radio, but it would have been really hard to probably produce on screen. I'm just guessing at that. And I think we all have the child in us, the horror stories and the macabre. That part of our childhood never leaves us.
And it's interesting how things just come back. Zombies are popular now and vampires. 40 years ago, zombies were popular with, you know, Monsters of Hollywood, the magazine, and Vincent Price and Peter Lorre, et cetera. But everything comes back. In fact, one of the books that I just saw advertised, and it makes it sound like it's a new book, but it's not The Maltese Falcon, as you just mentioned. As far as people going to this program tonight, what can they expect?
Well, what they'll see when they go into the theater is the front of the stage will be set up like a Golden Age radio broadcast studio. You'll have your actors there. We have I've constructed some mics of that era, so there won't be mics that they've ever seen before. But the amazing thing is the Foley will be there. We have a live Foley with these shows. And the Foley will be there at his table, and the audience will get to see him make the sound effects that go with the production. And they enjoy that, I think, just as much, maybe even more than the production itself, just seeing the sound effects being made.
Now, you as the director, how difficult was it, or should I say frustrating, working with the actors and getting them, you know, to synchronize with the Foley, but not just that, also making it sound like they're not standing in front of a microphone and just reading copy, but they're acting.
Yeah, that's really hard if you use, because there's a lot of physicality into acting. One of the things I do is it's very vintage. They have to wear suits and ties because the actors in those days did wear suits and ties, and the female actors wore dresses, and they have to wear vintage. I have a great collection of vintage ties and stuff that I make them wear to help them get into character. And then when we rehearse, we spend a lot of time saying, "Okay, you got to act with your voice." And some people find that very hard. You know, you got to put the infliction into the voice. Like tonight, the gentleman playing Gutman, he's known as the Fat Man. This gentleman is not what you would call hefty, but he does such a great job with his voice. If you close your eyes, you would picture this big, big overweight gentleman. You know, Dan has just done a great job with the voice. But we have to work at it. We just don't show up that night and read. There is a rehearsal process. I rehearse with them as an ensemble, and I rehearse with them individually.
Now, later on in the month, as you mentioned, and of course the original was in October 30th of 1938, mm-hmm. War of the Worlds, CBS. How is that going to happen as far as what people can expect to see, hear, or also how long does it take you to prepare for something like this? Because October 30th is not that far away, and you're currently working on something else.
Yeah. The Foley is already done. That's a good question. The most important part for the production is the Foley, the sound effects. You got to have them in place. You can imagine, I already have a good collection of Foley stuff, so it's just a matter of getting it together. The Foley is already done for War of the Worlds.
You are going to have commercials, just as if we were listening to the radio, and they're going to be the original commercials.
They're going to be the commercials. Like tonight's performance will have the commercials from 1946 in there, and they will be announced with the same attitude as the announcers do, very serious. The audience loves the commercials. The older ones, it's kind of reminiscent. They sit there and they say, yeah, I use that product, or I remember that product being around the house. The younger ones chuckle because of the language, the way it's presented.
But in the golden age of radio, you would have the announcer, but they would also always identify themselves as your announcer, Louis Sines, or they would say Ken Forrestal speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they would say.
Like Don Pardo. This is Don. Yeah. This is Don Pardo. Boom. Yeah. You knew the announcer's name. Yeah. And they would do it. And they're an integral part of it too, because sometimes the announcers would also do some of the splits in between, do some of the narrative also.
When they do that, when they do the narrative, and they did that a lot, especially during some of the detective shows, mm-hmm. like, you know, whether it be Philip Marlowe or Novak or even Candy Matson, you know, where they're talking, kind of like talking to themselves in their head. I was walking down the street when suddenly I saw this, da, da, da. How do you do that? Is it a pre-recorded voice or is it somebody in the background?
It'll be somebody actually saying the narrative. The only thing that they'll see recorded will probably be the music. Because we don't have an orchestra, so we will have our theme music and orchestral music will be the only thing that will be recorded. But everything else is done live.
And as far as producing these and putting them, have you tackled something that has been very difficult, or is there a play that a radio show that you loved as a kid, or you just love and you want to do it, but you're still trying to figure out how am I going to do this?
Yeah, well, The Dark, there's one sound effect, like I won't go into it, but there was one sound effect that had us bamboozled for a while, but we figured it out. The Wizard of Oz, I would love to see, you know, but I'm just seeing how that could be done. I think it would be great to have The Wizard of Oz as a radio show. And I did one of my favorites I've already done, Who's On First. That's one that I had to do.
You said you have not done any Westerns. Do you plan on doing any Westerns?
Yeah, Gunsmoke, and then I'll do the one John Wayne only appeared in one radio show, Red River. It was a movie he made, and he actually showed up and did it on radio. So I think for the John Wayne fans, we'll do Red River.
And you say you have a lot of scripts that you save and you collect. And I would imagine, as you mentioned, no computers back then, but thanks to computers now, you're able to save a lot of shows and to archive a lot of stuff.
Right. You can go to archives and get stuff. And you can also get sound effects now. There are sites that you can download sound effects if you so want to.
Can people want to see the show tonight? Where do they go? Where's it located?
The show will be at the El Paso Playhouse on Montana. And it'll be at 7 o'clock this evening. It will be the Maltese Falcon, followed by the Lights Out, The Dark, which is a very, very interesting little ditty of a show. And the same thing on October 30th at 7, we'll be doing Orson Welles' The War of the Worlds.
Ken, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Ken Forrestal, talking about the old-time radio dramas that he's been working on. And tonight, as you mentioned, The Maltese Falcon and The Dark. And that'll be at the El Paso Playhouse. Thank you for being with us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Perspectives will continue right after this.
Been having a little bit of a bad week?
And he is passing you off to a giant squid. You are part of some sort of food chain, my gosh.
Maybe you're feeling a little blue.
General sense of malaise, kind of.
How come you never mentioned this to me?
Wasn't sure how to pronounce it.
Well, we've got just the thing for you.
Made from whole wheat that gives shy persons the strength to get up and do what needs to be done.
Join us this weekend, won't you?
This afternoon at 4 on 88.5 FM KTEP, your NPR station for the Southwest.
And welcome back to Perspectives. And joining us on the second half of the program are Morgana Shaw, Hector Dez, and Catherine Smith McGlynn. And they are here to talk about an upcoming production that actually starts tonight at Fort Bliss. And it is called Reentry. It's a new organization, a conjunction working together with a theater and dance group here at UTEP. First of all, before we get started, I'd like to take the time to welcome you all and thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's start with you, Catherine. You are the director of this play, and I'll let you all know that Catherine is also an instructor here at UTEP and a professional instructor in residence at the Sam Donaldson Center for Communication Studies. So, Catherine, with that said, tell us a little bit about Reentry, because it is a different kind of play, if I may call it that, because there have been stories done, books written, but this is something very different and also very unique to El Paso because of Fort Bliss.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's titled as a docudrama. That's the genre that it is in. And Emily Ackerman and KJ Sanchez, who are the playwrights, both are from Marine families. So they're from military families. And what they did was use a method whereby they interview the interviewees. And instead of writing a dialogue, they actually were able to, I think, more or less edit the dialogue. So these are culled from interviews from actual Marines and Marine families. And so they're telling the story in their own voices. And they're woven together in a dramatic sense so that there is a sense of drama throughout.
This is a joint venture with you and the Department of Theater and Dance here at UTEP?
Yes, absolutely. We're very excited that we are a Frontier Repertory Theater Company. We are now in residence here at UTEP. In association with the Theater and Dance Department, and Dr. Joel Murray and his team there, his faculty, have been working very diligently with us on the production and design of the show, and they're offering us technical assistance in terms of set design, sound, lighting, all those things that the actors need for their backdrop to make it all happen. And so it's very much a very reciprocal relationship. And we both benefit from it, both the theater company and UTEP, and also I think the community as well.
And as I mentioned earlier, also we have two of the actors with us, and they are Morgana Shaw and Hector Dez. And if we could start with you, Morgana, and tell us a little bit about this play, Reentry, because as Catherine said, it is a different kind of play, if you want to call it. I'm not sure if there's such a word as a docu-play or documentary-type play, but it is different, telling a story still, but in a different kind of way.
Yes, it is. It's a docudrama is definitely how it's being presented. It's taken from these interviews, as Catherine said. And we, as the actors, have the opportunity to play these different characters and bring them to life in some way, hopefully, that will touch the audience in a more personal way rather than just words on the page, bringing the words to life that are, I must say, brilliantly written. I think they did a wonderful job with this piece. So it's really exciting to be here to do this piece, especially opening up at Fort Bliss with the kind of audience that we're going to be touching. I know it's going to be familiar territory for people, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Tell us about your role.
Well, I play several roles. We most of us do. Do you play more than one?
We
all do. Okay. I play mom. And I have two boys who enlisted, and I'm not going to give away my story.
Smart.
Yes, I play mom, and I play a captain, and I play a corporal, and I play... Who's my other person? Wait, I've forgotten Maria.
And Morgana should mention, Morgana is our actress from Dallas, Texas. And our equity actress that's here.
It's not my first time to El Paso, but first time to get to enjoy and spend time here. I've actually been here before, but it was a quick trip.
Now you get to enjoy it.
Oh, I love El Paso.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
And how about you, Hector? Tell us a little bit about your role and how do you get ready? How do you prepare yourself for, I mean, you being an actor, you've played a series of roles, I'm sure, but how do you prepare for something like this? It's a different type of play, different type of story.
Yes, it is. I was very much drawn into it when I read what it was because I have military experience myself. So my role is the CO, which stands for commanding officer. And I find it not, I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm very familiar. It's quite comfortable for me to get in the role because I've been in a similar position in real life. So I'm actually thoroughly enjoying it. And my role, of course, as the CO, the commanding officer, I've been around for a while now, deployed several times, and lived through a lot of things that, you know, the regular civilian person might not be, you know, might not experience. So in the play, it all kind of ties together the stories that we're conveying with the Marines and their family members, and the CO, and the rest of the cast kind of bring a story to life. So it kind of all our roles complement each other.
Hector, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for serving our country. And next, I would like to ask you, and if you would tell us, and you did briefly a little bit about, you know, what you all experience, what you all see. When, you know, we see those pictures of those families embracing and they're happy because they haven't seen each other. For a minute, you see that picture, you know, it brings out the tears, it brings out the emotions, but it doesn't show you what's going on inside, because as you said, you've seen so many things that other people have not seen, and those things stay with you. And sometimes your wife or your husband, whoever is here, may not understand that. And why is he acting like that? Why is she acting like that? What happened? They're not the same person I used to know, etc.
Yes, and the thing about it is that when you see these reunions on television and the families, you know, all this joy and happiness when they come back, it is, of course, because of the long period of time that they have been separated and all the hardship that the service members have gone through. But then there's the underlying issues that happen when they settle back into the homestead. The way that they used to relate before the service member left is not the same way. It's a different life. They have to get used to being a family again. And that's something that when you see the play, it helps you understand, because you hear it. When you hear us speak, do our lines and do our deliveries, our performance, you're actually hearing it straight from the mouth of the person that lived it. Because all the dialogue is taken straight from real Marines and real family members of those Marines.
As you said, those moments of reunion, spouse who stays here and the one who goes, they're both afraid of that moment of coming back and then being able to see that person again, because they know that they both have changed and they're not sure what to expect.
Yes, it's a mixed feeling. You have your joy and the expectation of the unknown, because you know what? I love this person. He or she's my partner, but I haven't seen him in a year. You know, in a year or 6 months, a lot of things change in a person, especially for the one that has gone through traumatic events. So it's a mixed bag of feelings. Yeah, it's like, oh, man, I'm so glad you're back. And then it's like, what's going to happen?
Yeah. So. And Hector actually also serves as our military consultant. And he, on the play, to make sure that we're staying true to the culture. And also, I think he burns a few calories with the rest of the cast, taking them through boot camp and
yes,
drills.
Mini, mini baby boot camp, can yeah. I say. We're trying, and he's been lovely and patient and hard on us, which is what we're supposed to get used to.
I wish I would have more time to do the boot camp.
Yes.
But we've done a lot of drills because the rest of the cast, you know, they have no military experience. And what is good for me to see is that my peers, the actors in this play, are so dedicated and so concerned about getting it right. So it makes my job easy, because you guys, you want to make sure that you represent and you're not, that you do it correctly, because we have an audience out there. Anywhere that this play is performed, there's an audience that are going to know, you know, these guys are not doing it right. So they're very concerned. They want to get it right. So it makes it easier for me to teach them all the drills. So.
And, of course, everybody, you know, some people will say, well, do you get nervous? Are you nervous? And even if they say no, people generally, I mean, they do get nervous. How about you all, like, tonight? You're going to be doing it for the real people who have been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, and dusted with it, as they said. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, for me personally, that's the ultimate for this piece, is to make sure that we tell it in a way that's truthful and believable and accurate, so that, because they will call us on it, and it will lose credibility if we're not. So Hector has been such a blessing to the show in his expertise and helping us stay true to sticking with what it's really about. It's not just theater. It's we are telling people's stories, and hopefully, all I can hope and pray is that I'm doing justice and that we move someone, that we've touched them, and we're getting the stories out there. Because you're right, this is a side of the story that a lot of people don't see or hear, and it's quite an honor to be a part of that storytelling, you know, and with what a great group of people that I'm getting to work with.
Catherine, as far as the play goes, is this the first time that it's ever been done, is this a play that's been written before, and the first time it's done in El Paso?
Well, there are lots of firsts that we can proudly say. The production was originally commissioned, I believe, out of New Jersey, and then went on to Off-Broadway in New York. One of the playwrights, Emily Ackerman, and I worked together as actors on a different piece a few years back, and that's how I knew that relationship with her. And I remember her talking about wanting to write about that experience. And when I realized that she put pen to paper, or tape recorder, however you want to put it, I reached out to her. And it turns out that she has toured a production of this particular piece to different military bases, Marine bases, actually, around the country. But to our surprise, it had not toured at all in the Southwest. And so this is not only the Southwest premiere, but it's also the first time that it's been performed at a military base in this region as well, in all of Texas and all of the Southwest.
Tell us again what time the performance is tonight, and then what time it'll be, and what the dates are for it being here on campus.
On campus. Tonight at 8 o'clock at the Fort Bliss Chapel, and also tomorrow night, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, the same time, same place. And actually at noon on Saturday, the playwright will be here as well, conducting a special acting and working writing workshop based on the method that she used to create the piece, which is very exciting. And then next weekend here at on campus, it will be at the Studio Theater, October 12th and 13th at 8 o'clock p.m. And then that Sunday, we'll have two shows, a matinee at 2:30 and then an evening performance at 7 o'clock.
Well, we want to thank you all very much for being with us here today. We've been speaking with Morgana Shaw and Hector Dez. Catherine Smith McGlynn is the director of Reentry, which again will be playing tonight at the Fort Bliss Chapel. Thank you all very much for being with us here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines. Mm-hmm.